it's Low, and you are tuned in to Wrestling Wind Down, a female-founded and hosted podcast dedicated to professional wrestling and, of course, our favorite adult beverage. On this week's episode, I am so excited to be joined by Ella J of A Wrestling Gal podcast. We'll be chatting about what kickstarted Ella's interest in professional wrestling and the creative process behind starting her own podcast. We're also diving into the best matches and moments from Raw, SmackDown, and NXT this week, including the online comparisons between the new Hurt Business faction and WWE's legendary group Evolution. And of course, it wouldn't be an episode of Wrestling Wind Down without our newest segment, Sip and Tell. So grab your glass of wine. We're going in for the three count. As I mentioned in my intro, I have Ella J from A Wrestling Gal podcast on the show today. Ella, I hope you're ready to sip some wine and talk some wrestling.
Oh, I definitely am. I'm excited to be on. Thank you for having me.
I want to jump in and chat about your passion for professional wrestling. How did it begin?
So I actually found wrestling by accident. So this was 2009 when I was 11, almost 12. I was just flipping through TV channels on a Friday night because I was bored. And then from what I remember, all of a sudden I see this guy in cool face paint. So I'm like, who is this? And then I stop and then it's Friday Night SmackDown and it was Jeff Hardy versus CM Punk. And it was actually Jeff's last match, like that loser leaves town match right before he left during 2009, you know, before he came back in 2017. So then I guess just Jeff Hardy like just captivated me, his high flying energy, just everything about him. But then at the end I was like, he's leaving, like don't go. But and then I guess that kind of solidified my love for wrestling. So I kept watching Friday Night SmackDown every single week. This was when CM Punk was like at his peak, like heel wise with Straight Edge Society. And I obviously didn't like him, but I had a great time booing him. And then I became a fan of like John Morrison, Randy Orton, and DX, and it just kept going from there. So it's been 11 years now.
How did you get into the women's side of wrestling? Were there any women's wrestling matches that caught your eye? Were there any superstars that you were interested in when you saw them?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So when in about October, so like 2 months later, they did this weird, they swapped Mickey and Melina. So I think Melina went to Raw, Mickey went to SmackDown. And so Mickey's first match back on SmackDown was her versus Layla, and so that was my first introduction to Mickey, and that kind of led to Mickey and Maria versus Lay Cool. That whole I got captivated by Mickey James, but the first women's segment or feud I saw was the whole Piggy James
thing.
So I was like, I feel like I just like empathized with Mickey. I'm like, this shouldn't be happening to her. But Mickey was just so fantastic in the ring, and she was a five-time champion at that point, and the crowd was just so behind her. I'm like, I like this girl. So I guess that was my first introduction to women's wrestling, was Mickey James and that whole like cool Piggy James segment. I wish it was a better like first introduction, but I like I said, Mickey's my all-time favorite, so I guess it was just a blessing in disguise.
As I mentioned, you do host your own wrestling podcast entitled Wrestling Gal. Talk to us about how you decided to start your own podcast and the conceptualization behind it.
So I've been watching wrestling for a long time now, and so I've been following a lot of wrestling podcasts and interviewers like Chris Van Fleet and Alicia Tude and a lot others to name a few, but I really was captivated by Alicia to, like I've said in another interview, I feel like she was really the driving force and the inspiration behind it, because I started watching her in 2017, like towards the end of the year. And just, I feel like that interaction between wrestler and like interviewer is just so cool, because you get to see different stories that you might not get to see off screen or on screen when they're playing characters. You get to know them as a person and kind of get like that behind the scenes scoop and like who they actually are as a person.
Right.
And you know, I love one-on-one interaction more. I do not do well in public speaking, but I love connecting with people, and wrestling has always been a passion of mine. And you know, I kind of dropped my whole, so I went to college for psychology, you know, and so I love that whole like picking people's brain thing. But then I went a different path, started thinking about doing it like May of last year, after I kind of got more into independent wrestling and hearing more of their stories and watching more of their matches. I was like, I kind of want to connect, because my friend Samira also does YouTube. Her name is It's Samira. She does a lot lot of like interviews and like show reviews and a lot of different wrestling content. So go follow her. We've been friends now for years and she had a blast doing that. I'm like, why can't I do this? Like, I love listening to it. I'm like, I think I could maybe have a voice for it. So then I created a wrestling gal. That wasn't the original name I was going to go with, but you know, I wanted something. I obviously did research to be sure the name wasn't taken.
Right.
I also followed those wrestling girls that you've had on. I saw them. I was like, that's kind of a cool name. I wanted it to be like from the female perspective because there's not a lot of like wrestling or like sports related podcasts, interviewers and all that. So for me, like Alicia and like those wrestling girls were like really cool. I'm like, they're doing their own thing. Like, how cool is that? And it was just really empowering. As for the conceptualization behind it, I feel like the crown, like every woman is a queen. So I don't know. I kind of just played around with the different logos. I was like, I don't know, you know, and I had to do a lot of research behind like what equipment to use, how to brand yourself, what logo and like everything setting it up. There was so much research before I even initially launched this and the equipment. As for merch, honestly, I didn't think I was ever going to create my own merch, but it's so fun to like create your own images. And like, I kind of found my groove and it's just really fun now to create, be inspired and basically have the own creative freedom to do whatever you want.
You currently have 70 episodes with guests spanning from Mickey James, who you mentioned is your all-time favorite women's wrestler, and Melina, to wrestling interviewer Alicia Toot, and many more. What has been your favorite interview to conduct to date and why?
So I feel like the obvious answer is Mickey. But like that one was just a dream come true. I'd been trying to make it happen for a while and she was just busy, but we finally made it happen. But another one that sticks out to me was actually episode 25 with Hot Scoop Skylar. She's from around the New England, Boston area. And that was kind of a different interview. We threw in a couple random questions talking about her, like from dental school to who would she want to create in her new stable because she loves Evolution, if she could reinvent it. And we were talking about some like childhood throwbacks. So for me, that one was just really fun because it was a little random and different, but we like just meshed so well together. So that one was a really fun one too, besides the obvious answer, Mickey, of course.
How does it feel to be a female voice in the wrestling community that is mostly male dominated? You know, there aren't a lot of female wrestling podcasts or wrestling podcasts hosted by female hosts. And me and you are in a small, very small field out there. How does it feel for you being in this community?
It's so welcoming. It's so empowering to see people like you, those wrestling girls, dead ass girls, wrestle friends. There's another, there's a female on WrestleJoy. There's a bunch more coming out lately too, because I think quarantine, the one benefit of this quarantine is more people are putting out more content.
Right.
But it's just so fun because it's so empowering and exciting to see women doing amazing things in wrestling. When people used to like make fun of me for being a wrestling fan growing up, like, oh, you know, it's fake, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you keep going with it because if it's something you're passionate about, who's to stop you? And it's so exciting and thrilling to see other women like you have a voice, you know, and like my bio says, hopefully the smallest voices can make it major. So we're all just keep on the grind. And I feel like we all have a passion for wrestling. So how could you not love that despite, you know, yeah, it's a male dominated business, but I feel like we're slowly on the rise. So I'm excited to see where these female podcasters, interviewers, content creators, where we go.
Agreed. I'm definitely excited to see what the future holds for us. Let's get into Monday Night Raw or quote unquote in your face Monday Night Raw this week. We saw Dominic Mysterio versus Seth Rollins in a steel cage match, and this match wasn't what everyone was talking about. A lot of people, including Dirt Sheets, were talking about the moment between Aaliyah Mysterio and Buddy Murphy, where Aaliyah was shown making sure that Buddy Murphy was okay. And now people are jumping to conclusions, which if it was exercise, these people would be getting a workout. They think that it's going to lead to a romantic relationship between 19-year-old Aaliyah Mysterio and 31-year-old Buddy Murphy. What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, I think it's absolutely ludicrous. I feel like they just see one thing and then they run with it. And like, first of all, it doesn't matter if she's technically legal. I feel like that age gap. She's still a teenager, still very young. And I feel like they just want something to like rile up the people, just have something to talk about for clickbait. I hope to God there's no truth to it. I don't believe there is, but I feel like sometimes people just take stuff and kind of run with it and put their own spin on it. And then just to hear the outcry of the people just for like clickbait and views. I mean, I don't know what the reasoning was behind that. I rewatched it, and then she did look back at the camera to be sure that we noticed it. This is a face turn for Buddy Murphy. I don't foresee a romantic storyline going forward. I feel like there's something there because she obviously did a double take at the camera to be sure that we saw it and like took note of it. So I don't know what's going to happen. I hope there's no romantic storyline. I don't foresee that. But then again, you never know.
Right. You know, this storyline has been going on for a really long time, and I've mentioned it too. I would love to see something else here. Dominic Mysterio is a fresh face to the WWE, and he has a lot of potential. You know, he's worked with Seth for a while now. He's worked with Buddy Murphy, and they're really building him up to put him on this pedestal to be a future successful star in the WWE. But who would you like to see Dominic face off next after this whole storyline concludes?
So I feel like this storyline actually is kind of concluded because Seth is alone now. The AOP got released. Buddy Murphy just turned face. So I feel like they might have Buddy and Seth feud. But then, like you said, Dominic is kind of left for a new feud. So I feel like Angel Garza and Andrade kind of split up. They had this little tension between them. And I think Angel said, like, I'm done with you or I'm going my own way. So I could foresee, because Dominic is obviously a face character, feuding with maybe Andrade and Zelina. Or someone else who I would love to see would be Dominic Mysterio versus Mustafa Ali, because he's just been kind of put on main event. But I feel like since Dominic is associated with his father, Ray, who's known for like high-flying moves, Mustafa Ali is the perfect person to work with to, you know, kind of put on a clinic and show some high-flying lucha style, or, you know, just those high-energy moves.
Right.
So I could see, I don't know where else they would put him besides, like, Andrade, if they're pushing this Andrade-Angel Garza split. Who's Andrade going to feud with next? And I feel like that could be the next feud for Dominic. What do you think?
I mean, I think it is interesting you said Andrade, but I think it's even more intriguing that you said Mustafa Ali, because I saw online recently that he's being pushed as a heel now, which is really odd because he had that character, strong superhero character that a lot of people associated with a face. And now on main event, he's being pushed as a heel. A lot of people associated him with the whole hacker storyline that they had that suddenly got cut off. I could actually see them going up against each other, and I think it would be really exciting for the fans to watch.
That is true. He did face Humberto Carrillo on main event, and Humberto is a face. So, I mean, I didn't actually watch it, but if that makes sense why they would have like a face versus face if they're going to turn Mustafa heel, it's interesting how they would, I mean, if they canceled the hacker, what ammunition are they going to give him for turning heel? So I'm interested to see. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you never know. I feel like they're just throwing people together, but
yeah,
who knows?
Speaking of retribution, so this week we saw a promo shown of the group. There were only two members of the group speaking, and a lot of people think they know who's in the group. We've seen so many people involved, but I'm almost 99.9% sure. I'm willing to bet a whole bottle of wine that Dominik Dijakovac, Mia Yim, Mercedes Martinez, those are the only three that I can 100% tell based on their eyes last week. I saw Shane Thorne might be involved and Dio Madden, but honestly, I'm not that familiar with them to the point where I'm like, that's their eyes. But who do you think is going to be a part of this group? Do you think they're staging it with these people now and they might change them out once they actually reveal them? Or do you think they're going to stick with the people that were in the promo?
At least for Mercedes and Mia, Mercedes just lost 2 weeks ago against Rhea Ripley in that steel cage match. And she kind of isn't associated with the Robert Stone brand anymore. So why not put her? And I feel like that was kind of a transition. She was the first one to speak to in the promo. And you could tell that it was Mercedes and Mia by their eyes. So I feel like they definitely have to keep Mercedes if they drew her away from that Robert Stone brand. Mia Yim hasn't done anything really on NXT in about 3 weeks. since did she face Shotzi, or I think it was Shotzi, a couple weeks ago. And if this is a Mia, they have to be heels at this point. I'm interested to see, because Mia Yim's character is kind of more edgy, kind of like grungy.
Right.
So they could, I feel like her and Mercedes could absolutely lead that charge for the women. I feel like they mesh well together. They have a similar like attitude, you know, like kind of tough. The one was definitely Dominik Dijakovic. It was definitely him. But I've also seen people say that Shane Thorne could be Mojo Rawley, but
I've
that did not
Miz
look like Mojo Rawley to me. I've seen Shane Thorne wrestle. That definitely looked like Shane Thorne to me and Dio Madden. But also you have to remember too, at the end of Raw this week, they had like 12 people who were way more than the five they showed backstage. So I feel like those five might be just the main like leaders in the group. I feel like though, if they're going to do this week late, they can't keep up with 12 people. That would just be ridiculous.
Right.
So I feel like if we're going to have those five, stick with those five. I'm excited because Dio Madden used to be on commentary before he was thrust back into in-ring action. We haven't seen much of him since. So good for him. This gives him an opportunity. We haven't seen a lot of Dijakovic either since in a couple months. Actually,
right.
A couple weeks. So I feel like this just gives them a new opportunity. You know, as annoying as Retribution has kind of been, I feel like there needs to be a good payoff for it. You have a great group of talent. They just need to do something productive with them.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to seeing how they really grow the group after we know who they are. That's the first step, is identifying mm-hmm. exactly who these people are. But what's their place on the roster after? Are they going to keep on just attacking random people and doing all of that? Or are they actually going to be involved in a storyline at some point?
I feel like too, with the mix of the genders, if they were going to stay together, you would have to have like another counterpart. You would have to have two women on the Raw side and like three men or something. I feel like they would split them apart. They would have the women go after the women, and like maybe even towards the tag titles, like Mercedes and Mia. I feel like
oh,
they would
yeah.
have their own
good
like
point.
Separate name. I don't feel like they're going to keep them all together, at least for a while. If the three guys, they can do basically whatever, because the men's roster is so much bigger. But I feel like if they're gonna go all together, they have to have a counterpart on Raw, another stable. But you can't just throw them together, so they have to figure out how they're gonna tell that story.
Speaking of mystery, SmackDown has promo shown of a mystery woman. It almost looks like Dancing with the Stars, in my opinion. She's shown with like this dance outfit on. She has this big fur coat on, and people online are wondering, who the hell is this? And I think WWE kind of messed up last week when they forgot to blur her tattoo out. So many people are thinking that it is Carmella. As we know, Carmella has not really been in action lately. She's been on her podcast with Corey Graves, the Bear With Us podcast, and she has mentioned a lot that she hasn't been working. And it's almost throwing me off, because why are you saying that so often? I think it is Carmella, just based on the fact that we've seen the tattoo. It looks like her. A lot of people online were saying, it can't be her. She's too buff. But girl, she's been in quarantine all this time. Maybe she's working
True.
Out. Who do you think it is? I've seen also Summer Rae rumored, which I think is a long shot.
I've also seen Eva Marie rumored, but the thing is, she's not even blonde right
yeah.
now. And I don't foresee her re-signing right now, because she has a big focus on her clothing company. So I feel like they did spoil it. I don't see it being anyone other than Carmella. We haven't seen Carmella in weeks. I just hope though that this does not turn into like an Emelina situation where it's going on for like 3, 4, 5, 6 months and then Carmella comes out and just like, yeah, I'm going back. Goodbye.
I
You'll
get that
see me
vibe,
in a few
though.
Weeks.
I do get that vibe from it. Like, you remember when they had first started with Emelina and also with Eva Marie? It was very
yeah.
like sensual. And even Mandy Rose at some point. Like, it was very like, pay attention to me. Like, here I am. But yet they really didn't have them do anything. Now with Mandy Rose, she has grown as a superstar.
Absolutely.
She's gone over to Raw and she's proven that she can wrestle in the ring. She's not just a pretty face. But when I think of Emelina and I think of Eva Marie, they really focused on that whole promotion type thing instead of them actually wrestling. And I see that almost being a thing here, even though Carmella has been a multiple time SmackDown Women's Champion.
Like you said, they're building it so much now that if the payoff, it can't be be anticlimactic if the payoff isn't worth it. It's like, why did you spend all this time? I feel like, too, if she's going to come back, she was faced prior to this. If they're going to revamp her character, they need to bring back heel Carmella, because that was when she was the most entertaining straight up. She was so entertaining during her heel run as SmackDown's Women's Champion with all the antics and stuff. It made you want to tune in, at least for me. Like, I always looked forward to who Carmella was feuding with. I'm like, what has she got up her sleeve this time? Like, when she beat Asuka twice, no one thought that was going to happen, but she did. And, you know, she's a sneaky, creative heel.
On Raw this week, in our main event, we saw Mickie James face off against Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship. And I've seen your tweets about how Mickie James has been being treated on the Raw roster. I've seen a lot of tweets. People are unhappy. I'm unhappy. Mickie James is a legend on this roster, but she finally got an opportunity to face off against Asuka for this Raw Women's Championship. And the ending of this match was very highly talked about on Twitter. Many people did not know what the hell happened at the end of this match. So Asuka had Mickie in a submission lock, and it almost looked like something happened to Mickie, like she was injured or something. Something happened, and she was talking to the ref. People were trying to make out what she was saying. And then people also thought, well, maybe the ref botched. He has a history of botching. Who knows? What were your thoughts during this moment?
Well, it's funny you bring up people were trying to decipher, because I spent like a good hour trying to turn up the volume, you know, tune out the crowd, trying to figure out what he was saying after Mickie something. And I'm like, ugh. Well, first of all, I know she's okay. Well, at least that's what she told me, that she's okay. And plus, she did an interview, I think, with Alex McCarthy from TalkSport, and kind of explained the ending, because she's a pretty much a straight shooter. Mickie was in the Asuka lock, and then Mickie reversed it onto like she was on top of Asuka and kind of pinning Asuka, but the ref didn't count it. She had her for like a two count. The ref didn't count it. And then, so because the ref wasn't counting it, Asuka reversed it back into the Asuka lock. And that apparently that wasn't supposed to be the ending. So there was kind of a miscommunication with the ref. I guess Mickie thought that someone told the ref that, like they thought she was injured or something, so they were kind of looking out for her. And I mean, there were a few botches in that match, so maybe they thought like she blacked out for a moment or something, but she was clearly okay during the end of that match. She was like, what the heck was that? So I don't know if it was someone feeding the ref into the piece, like, you need to end this now, like, we think Mickie's injured. I think that was the case, but who knows?
You know, I am glad to see that they did at least take that effort. And we saw a couple weeks ago Ivar was injured, and he's getting surgery now. And on the AEW side of things, we've seen it done not as professionally. So I'm glad at least that they were worried about her to the point where they did in the match. But it was very sloppy how it happened. And so many people were just trying to figure out what happened. And it makes me wonder, what's next for Mickie James? Is she going to try to get a rematch? Do you think she's going to get another shot at it?
She said in her interview, at least with the outcome of that match, she has a reason to go, and now it'd be tomorrow at the time of recording this, that she can go and kind of cry and complain about it to get a rematch, because she clearly, like, it wasn't a clean, or it was a messy ending straight up.
Right.
So she's definitely, at least from what I know, whether they will let her do that is another thing, but I know she wants to kind of get her payback, but I guess retribution on Asuka. So at least I know Mickie wants to, because there's a legit reason why she would want a rematch for it. And Clash of Champions is next week. So why not? They have a proper reason if they're going to give Asuka a person to fake, because every championship has to be defended. It has to be Mickie. There's like no other person.
On NXT this week, we saw Shotzi Blackheart face off against Io Shirai in a non-title match. And they had this at the beginning of the show, but I definitely think it could have main evented the card. It was very good. Shotzi showed up and she showed out, and Io Shirai, of course, did the same. There were some spots in here that had me nervous. The German suplex spot on the side of the ring. Oh my God. That stressed me out. Like, they replayed it after the fact too. And I'm like, oh my God, like, is she okay? She was okay. Io Shirai ended up winning the match, and I loved the ending of the match where they showed the sportsmanship and respect for each other, because that doesn't typically happen in an NXT ring. It doesn't happen in a WWE ring at all, you know? So I really enjoyed this match. What did you think about it?
Oh, I watched it back too. I loved it too because they had a lot of reversals on each other and Shotzi kind of was getting the upper hands for a while with a lot of submissions, like tangling Io up like with her arms behind her back and tangling it up in her legs and all that. And so there was like two or three submissions where Io was fighting to get her leg on the rope and it kind of made Io the underdog of Shotzi because Shotzi was getting in all this offense. And then there was the spot right before they did the German, like on the top rope, Io was trying to German Shotzi back into the ring, but then Shotzi pushed her off and then Shotzi tried to go for, I don't know if it was a powerbomb, kind of what Alexa Bliss does. I forget what it's not a Canadian destroyer, but it's one of those things. But then Io pushed her off and then Shotzi kind of got hit and then they did the German on the ring apron and that made me nervous too. I'm glad she was okay.
Right.
But this was just really exciting back and forth match, you know, and you didn't know who was going to win, but it gave Shotzi a time to shine. It gave her a chance to show with, I think, the best women's wrestler in the world today. Personally, it gave her a time in the spotlight to go against the best and not only improve herself, but to show out and let these people realize like how big of a threat, how big of a talent she is.
William Regal did announce on NXT that there will be a number one contenders match for the NXT Women's Championship. It's a battle royal. A lot of women involved here, but as we mentioned earlier, the two women that are not involved that are a part of the NXT roster is Mia Yim and Mercedes Martinez, which shouldn't they be a part of this match? But there are a lot of other women involved. Who do you see winning this match?
So I have a theory. I feel like that spot with Shotzi and Io at the end of Good Sportsmanship is going to have implications if they were to have, because I feel like whoever wins is going to have it at NXT TakeOver on October 4th.
Right. That's
so
what they said.
You would think that since Io has kind of naturally solidified herself as a face now, it would have to be a heel. So that automatically eliminates like Rhea, Casey, and Tegan. So for me, that leaves two big names, Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai. And I feel like they're interchangeable in this. For me, I think either one of them could go against Io. They'll gang up on her somehow, but then at the end, Shotzi might come in and save Io. So I feel like it's going to be Raquel. Maybe it's just wishful thinking because I love them. I love Rhea too, but I want Dakota Kai to be champion so badly. So I feel like it's going to be Dakota or Raquel. And then that spot, I feel like Shotzi's going to come out of respect and maybe not, you know, how Rhea came out to kind of not save Io. But I feel like if they have that moment of sportsmanship, Shotzi might come out and kind of save Io and maybe have a spot. I don't know. What do you think?
You know what's interesting to me? I remember a couple months ago, it might have been at In Your House or it was right after, we saw that face-off between Raquel Gonzalez and Rhea Ripley, and there has been no continuation of that whatsoever. I'm wondering if they're going to do something there because they are two women on the roster that are taller, they are stronger than most of the division. Why have they not capitalized on this yet? And we've always seen Raquel Gonzalez almost in the background for Dakota Kai. Maybe she might end up challenging Io Shirai. I mean, if she wants to make a name for herself in NXT, she needs to step out of the background for Dakota Kai and either face off against Rhea Ripley or, I don't know, maybe she screws over Dakota Kai in a match with Io Shirai. I mean, there's so many possibilities there, but I think at the end of the day, Raquel Gonzalez has not had her time yet. It's making me a little bit nervous just because she's been there for a while. We know she can go. Like, what's the hold up here?
I feel like, too, with the Battle Royal, you see a lot of, because it's every man for themselves. And like you saw Sonya and Mandy at butt heads, and Mandy tried to eliminate Sonya.
Right.
So I feel like that might be an interesting possibility. And then there might be some tension between Raquel and Dakota. Eventually they have to split up. I mean, they've been together since the beginning of the year at January, I think. So, I mean, they've had time to establish themselves as a team kind of, but like you said, Raquel's in the background. So if Raquel was going to have a title match, now would be the time, this week would be the time, perfect opportunity to eliminate Dakota Kai. And Dakota be like, what the heck? Cause they were supposed to stick it out to the final two. Mm-hmm. It gives her the ammo, you know.
Let's get into some men's action. The Hurt Business is running rampant on Monday Night Raw. Recently, Cedric Alexander is the newest member of the Hurt Business. And I saw a lot online online this week that many people are comparing this faction to Evolution, which is laughable to me. And this is the reason why I think it's laughable. I think a lot of people are comparing it because it's four men that are in suits that come out. They're strong in the ring. You have MVP, who would kind of be like the Ric Flair of the group, who has done a lot in his WWE tenure. I think people compared Bobby Lashley to Triple H, Randy Orton, Cedric, and then Shelton Benjamin to Batista. I don't like that because I think every faction in the WWE is different. And I've really been a fan of the Hurt Business because I really liked MVP growing up. I feel like Shelton Benjamin, ever since he came back to the WWE, he really hasn't had a spot. He hasn't really had a moment. I know he was with Chad Gable for a while there, but they never really had a strong run comparable to how Shelton Benjamin was with Charlie Haas in the World's Greatest Tag Team. I hate to age people, but that's when Shelton Benjamin was at his prime. And I feel like with the Hurt Business being involved with Bobby Lashley, who honestly hasn't really had his moment as well. Yeah, he's champion now, but the past couple years, he's always been the strong man character. He hasn't really had any personality. And Cedric Alexander, we know he's been on 205 Live, really hasn't had his moment either. Do you think they're like Evolution, or do you think it's a stretch?
No, like you said, every tag team is different. Yeah, sometimes they might incorporate certain like styles or mannerisms about them, but literally in Evolution, you had two vets, two newbies. Shelton Benjamin is a veteran, so is MVP, so is Bobby Lashley. So, I mean, I guess they wear suits and stuff, but every tag team is different. Like, just because they wear suits doesn't mean they can be compared to Evolution. They're on two totally different planes for me anyways, but I love this because, one, I love MVP so much. I'm so glad he came back, kind of, not to look after, but kind of, you know,
almost like a mentor.
Yeah, and kind of like putting over people and like guiding people along this. And plus, in the years past, Shelton has kind of been an afterthought. And with this, it allows him to, one, not only get the mic time, but two, actually like win and show, like win matches. You know, he normally doesn't win a lot, at least when he initially came back. And it gives him like a core, you actually focus in on him and you actually have something to say and you're paying attention to him. It's not just a throwaway match or throwaway segment. You're at least I'm invested in the Hurt Business. I'm intrigued to see Cedric kind of integrate himself into the Hurt Business because as far as I know, he's been like this face character for a long, long time.
Right.
So I'm interested to see where they go next with them. And plus Bobby, I'm so glad it's finally something solid for him. Not like the whole Lana story.
Right.
I personally love the Hurt Business. I'm cheering them, even though I'm not supposed to. But that's because I'm biased.
I'm really glad to see that Ricochet and Apollo Crews are involved here because I mentioned a couple weeks ago, you know, these are men that were brought up from NXT or were on 205 Live that are very talented and capable, but they just haven't had a spot. Ricochet came up with Aleister Black, and Aleister has really been thriving lately with Kevin Owens, but Ricochet was kind of left in the dust, and that was really shocking because of how talented Ricochet is. But now he's involved in this storyline, and I feel like this could really help him grow as well as Apollo. We know that he is a former United States champion now, and having him involved with these veterans is almost, like you said, like a teaching moment. So he could definitely learn here, but he's also shown on TV on a weekly basis. We saw the return of Sasha Banks in a backstage promo on SmackDown this week. As we know, Bayley attacked Sasha Banks a couple weeks ago when Sasha's been out. Many people predicted that Sasha would be out until Royal Rumble in January, which is a very long time. So I'm very glad to see that she is back this year. So she cut a promo and then Bayley attacked Banks again. People are thinking that this is solidifying Bayley as that strong heel. She's showing that she does not need Sasha Banks by her side to be a strong heel in the WWE.
Well, firstly, yes, Bayley is solidifying herself as a strong heel, but it's also kind of that cowardly heel too, because one, Sasha was not incapacitated, but injured, not 100%, and two, her back was turned. So, I mean, Bayley's been playing kind of the cowardly heel since she turned, but like, this is like a move for her. She's attacking her best friend. And if you're going to attack your best friend, like in the world of wrestling, like you're the biggest scum, you know, but good for her character. They've been building this for so long. This is one of the stories that has been greatly built, and it was paced very nicely. It wasn't rushed. They had great highs and lows to balance everything out. So I'm excited to see where they go forward with this. I feel like this might be led into Survivor Series. I feel like they're not going to have the big payoff yet. Maybe at Hell in a Cell or something next month.
I wish this would be at WrestleMania, but that's so far away.
Yeah.
And I think WWE would love to have a match between these two in front of the fans, because we've seen them at TakeOver. Everyone still talks about that match, the reception that it got, how well it was done. But thinking about it being in Los Angeles, in March or April, I mean, that seems so far away. Like, what would they even do with them up until that point?
I mean, they've dragged the story out this far. I mean, who knows? I don't know. I honestly don't know. If for some reason, you know how sometimes like people who are feuding will get thrown into a tag title match and then they'll win the tag titles and then like turn against each other. That's the only thing I can think of them doing, like, to try and lengthen this. I don't foresee it going to Mania. That would be so drawn out, even as good of a storyline as it is. That would mean Bayley would be, I mean, realistically, Bayley's not losing this championship to anyone other than Sasha.
Right.
So if that were to get dragged out to Mania, and
she
I don't
would
want
be
them
champ
to
for almost like 2 years at that point.
Unless they, I don't want them to hot potato it either. So this needs to end like the end of this year, like Survivor Series or TLC in December. I think they do TLC in December still. I hope so anyway. I feel like this needs to have a big payoff at Survivor Series, or, you know, they could do Hell in a Cell next month. That would be a great moment. Sasha has great performances in Hell in a Cell, so that could be another history. True. You know, she's faced Becky and Charlotte in Hell in a Cell matches, and then she would have Bayley. So that's kind of coming full circle. So who knows?
Let's get into our newest segment, Sip and Tell. This week, it was reported that Melina, a former WWE Women's Champion, had re-signed to the company. The news broke by PWI Insider that she would be returning to the company. She had signed, and she was going to be returning within the next week. We should have known when they said the next week that something was off, but everyone was really excited that she was returning. She had some involvement in the WWE, I think, earlier this year, or late last year, where she was, I think she was like on the Raw anniversary and
Raw reunion, yeah.
The Raw reunion, and people were surprised to see her because she hadn't been involved in the WWE in a while. Speed up to a couple of days ago, Melina posted a message and she shuts down the rumors, saying that she is not returning to the WWE. She has not signed, but that doesn't mean it's not a possibility. And I saw earlier when I was researching that people are saying, was she trying to throw people off by saying that she hasn't signed when she has? I know you feel strongly about this. What do you think about this whole report and rumor that Melina might be returning to the WWE?
The thing is, so I kind of found out before she publicly posted about it, because I am on her Patreon and she posted about it a couple hours before she publicly said anything. So I knew that it was going to get shut down. Like, she's gone through so much in these last 2 months. Her father has passed away. She was in Mexico trying to do the funeral, and she's just gone through so much in these last 2 months. But I do know that she's been training to try and get back into shape. And I know that she said that she's been talking to them because they reached out to her after her father died and passed away. And so I feel like people kind of just took that and kind of ran with it. Oh, Melina's getting signed, because in the past they've had talks like, we'd like to have you in the future, but they never had a solid plan for her. So I guess people just kind of took that phone call as, oh, she finally signed, she's gonna come back. Realistically, if she were to like sign, I feel like a week, what how are you gonna bring her back in a week?
Right,
there needs to
exactly.
be some build up, or it needs to be a major surprise. It can't, you know, it can't just be, oh yeah, Melina's coming back in a week with no build up. The only thing I could see her even doing would be to I guess either feud with Mickey or tag with Mickey, because that would be the only or maybe Natty, maybe her and Mickey against Natty and Lana. That would be the only storyline I could see her being in on Raw.
I loved Melina growing up, and even thinking about her being back in the WWE would be a good thing. And I'm sure you've seen the talk online about why people don't want her back for you know, personal reasons that have gone on online, and I won't get into that here. It's on Twitter if you guys want to research more about it. We do have a confirmed signing. So we know that Maura Ranallo left NXT earlier this month, and now Wade Barrett is officially part of the WWE NXT commentary team. He is a former champion in the WWE, and he has done commentating on the NWA, but he's back in the WWE. I was watching NXT back from this week, and I think he's a great commentator. You know, he's had a strong run in the WWE as a performer, so I'm really interested to see him as a commentator and see how much he brings to that position. I do think it is, or it will be interesting once Nigel McGuinness comes back, because now they have just Vic Joseph and Beth Phoenix yes. with Wade Barrett, but Nigel is, I think he's in the UK, so he hasn't been working with them at all. So I'm wondering how that dynamic will be once he comes back.
I know Wade is signed for at least a year. I forget if they extended it or not. But, I mean, that's a good point. As far as I know, the UK is not, like, open really at all. They just went back, at least in Scotland, they went back into shutdown again because I was interviewing a guest and we were talking about it. Like, Scotland just got shut down again. Oh my so God. I don't foresee Nigel coming back. I mean, unless somehow he gets, like, a work visa. I don't know how it works. But the addition of Wade, I was super excited about because Wade has been a favorite of mine for years now, and I was super sad when he left. But if he's gonna come back, he's great on the mic. You know, you saw that when he was Bad News Barrett. He is so great on the mic, has great promo skills, and commentating gives him time to kind of, like, you know, sit back, get familiar with the new WWE atmosphere. And then
right.
I know he's open to getting back in the ring. He's not close to being retired. So I feel like give him some time, you know, to fill in, get back in his groove, and then eventually you could have him facing off with some great NXT talent and then maybe to the main roster again, taking it back to his NXT roots. So it's kind of, like I said, full circle.
Finally, WrestleVotes broke a story this week that WWE has reportedly assembled a small team to explore the feasibility of whether the company has any options of running TV shows from an outdoor venue. Jesus. I sigh because I've been covering this for as long as WWE has been shut down in terms of having fans in the arena. We know AEW just started bringing fans into their outdoor arena. Amway Center, their deal with WWE expires at the end of October. So it seems like WWE is kind of scrambling to see what they can do next. It just makes me nervous because we know the capacity that WWE holds events at. And we know that WWE hosts thousands of fans in their arenas. And thinking about them scaling that back and almost depending on their fans to not come to these events if they're sick and wear their mask, like, is that really going to happen? And then you think about WrestleMania in Los Angeles in March or April and the capacity that WrestleMania is at with even more fans. How the hell are they expecting this to work? I'm seeing that they think that they want to do it in the southern states, which we know they've been in Florida and AEW has been in Florida, but now they're talking about southern in general. But Vince McMahon, we are still in a pandemic, sir. How do you expect this to work?
It's funny, too, because normally Mania tickets go on sale in November, so that's 2 months away. They would probably have to make up their mind within that 2 months, but right. It took them literally weeks to decide that Mania this year was, like, getting, like, canceled for fans. It was, like, 2 weeks before, I think they were like, oh, yeah, you guys will get a refund on your ticket.
But wasn't that so... Like, I know. I had reached out to some people that were going to WrestleMania because I was intrigued by how WWE did all of this. They broke their statement online that they weren't hosting WrestleMania on Twitter. Like, they sent out no emails. They did not alert their fans that had tickets. They found out on Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a way to go about stuff. And I feel like that wasn't particularly smart on their end. You have people traveling from all over the U.S. and other countries. And mind you, yes, we are in a pandemic. People knew that this would probably get canceled, but they still need to know, well, how am I getting my money back? And like you said, 2 months away, they need to figure out, hey, you know, are we selling tickets to the next WrestleMania or not? And the way it's looking on the West Coast, I don't expect WrestleMania to happen.
I don't either.
I'm in Las Vegas. We have the Raiders Stadium, and they built this beautiful stadium with no fans in it. And they're playing their football there, but... There are no fans there, and I'm expecting the same thing to happen at the SoFi Arena in Los Angeles. I mean, it's the same type of thing. They might go there and host a show, but they're only going to have the essential staff there that's needed to host the event. They're definitely not going to be doing access. They're not going to have the big WrestleMania that we're used to, which is sad, but at the end of the day, you really need to care about your fans' safety and well-being. Thank you, Ella J, for joining me today on Wrestling Wind Down. Where can the people find you on social media and listen to A Wrestling Gal?
So you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at A Wrestling Gal. My website is awrestlinggal.com, and you can find my podcast on basically anywhere you get your podcasts. Anchor, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, basically anywhere.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Wrestling Wind Down. You can find all of our other episodes available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, iHeartRadio, and wherever else you listen to your podcast. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at WWDCAST. Our new website is also coming soon. Let us know what you thought about the episode. What was your favorite part? We upload episodes with brand new co-hosts every week. Until next time, enjoy your wine, and of course, enjoy your wrestling. Cheers!